From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Could last week's defeat of the Republican health care bill actually become a Trojan horse leading to Medicare for all?
We have got to have the guts to take on the insurance companies and the drug companies and move forward toward a Medicare for all, a single payer program. And I'll be introducing legislation shortly to do that.
That was Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders earlier this week discussing a bill that he plans to introduce with a member of the House of Representatives from Vermont. We discussed that and more with our regular political commentator, Professor Tony Montero, via Skype from Philadelphia Tuesday. Professor Montero, thank you for your time. A pleasure as always.
Thank you very much, Don.
Quite a week. Trump staking out, basically saying, look, put up or shut up and we're going to move on, which moves the ball down the road. And Sanders announcing that he and a member of the House from Vermont are going to be introducing a Medicare for All bill. All of the revelations that, they're attacking the hell out of Nunes, but Nunes basically is like, the cat with a bird in his mouth at the moment, with apparently evidence of all kinds of wrongdoing involving wiretapping Trump. I think that's what it's going to be about. Now, you want to probe this and talk about the general crisis this all takes place within?
Yes. Well, I think on these investigations, it appears to be two sides here. On the one side, in the House of Representatives, certain Republicans, it seems, headed by Nunes and the House Intelligence Committee, and Democrats on that committee, Congressman Schiff in particular, fighting Nunes. So you have in the House of Representatives this Democrat-Republican fight over what they call intelligence products, or really what is the essence of it, the politicization of intelligence and of the intelligence operatives. On the other side, you have the Senate Intelligence Committee that's working more closely with both the FBI and the NSA. They're positioning themselves as kind of the adults in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But in the big picture, this is going forward. It's obvious now that what we call the deep state, or the intelligence wing of it in particular, are being brought out into the open, which can't be a very comfortable place for them to be. It's, I think, going to be shown, and I think this is what the Nunes press conference and revelations begin to suggest, that the CIA and the NSA and other intelligence agencies connected to the deep state are and were operating first to defeat Trump and then now to delegitimate his presidency and possibly to set up grounds for his impeachment, in particular using the laws against treason. So I think that's where we are. The political alignments are not along party lines. And I think this is one of the difficult things for a lot of people to understand, that we're no longer in that moment. It is not like all of the Republicans are united against all the Democrats, or all of the Democrats are united, or all the Republicans are united. No, this is more like palace politics, where your friend today is your enemy tomorrow. Backstabbing is going on all over the place. And at the end of the day, what we're looking at is a profound, almost historic struggle for power within the ruling class. And what brought this on was not the conflicts necessarily within the ruling class, but a rejection of all sides by the masses of people as manifested in the 2016 election. And here I want to underline a rejection of all sides. The vote for Trump was not the traditional Republican vote. That would have been more like what we saw in 2012 with Romney. Right. This was fundamentally different. It was a qualitatively different situation.
You know, and this thing that's on display all of a sudden, this ugly thing that people are seeing, you know, the nature of for the maybe the first time in their lives. You refer to it as the deep state, and Glenn Ford referred to it as the real state. And yeah, I might refer to it either perhaps as a psychotic state that's on its way towards a fugue state. You know, it's a mess. And and you have this palace intrigue that's playing out. And for the first time, people are becoming aware of the fact, A, that there is a palace, and B, that there's like multivariegated interests that are inside there that are wrestling with each other all the time. And now you have a condition where, you know, the palace itself is in flux because there are people storming it outside, essentially. And some of them are inside, and a lot of them are inside, including in the Oval Office. And looking at the dynamics around the healthcare thing, for example, you know, Sanders and his buddy managed to get this introduced into at least on the floor of the House and the Senate. All Trump has to do is chime in and say, "Yeah, let's do that." What? Wow! Like, blam! Everything explodes and fractures on all these new lines.
Yeah. And he could do it because he was not elected by the Republican establishment. In fact, most of them worked against him. Right. And he is the closest thing to an independent politician in the White House that we have seen.
Ever.
Certainly the closest thing to it would have been Lincoln.
Right.
But he is unlike any president that we've seen in the last 75 years. And he, you know, in spite of everything, has the ability, because he is not bound to the Republican Party, to the Republican establishment, to make moves that are unusual and unprecedented, such as supporting, as you suggest, Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. This would throw everybody into a state of political panic,
right?
Including the so-called radical left.
Right. And I can imagine what would happen on Wall Street the day after that was announced, too, in the stock market and such.
Well, we already saw what happened on Wall Street when the Republican repeal and replace didn't go through. The right. Stock market showed a decline for the first time in weeks since right. Trump's election, for the most part, because what the stock market perceived this to mean is that Trump is not in control of the Congress, and a lot of the pro-corporate stuff that they had looked to might not
happen.
Be possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so then he jumps right in. That might explain why he jumps right into the tax reform, quote unquote, which is the goodies for Wall Street, among others.
Right, right. And Wall Street is not a single thing either, because, you know, there are small and medium sized businesses
right.
That want to get out from under the domination of the big banks.
That's right.
And to do this, they need certain tax reforms that benefit or make small business more able to operate. On the other side, you know, Medicare for All would be to the interest of small and medium-sized businesses.
That's true. That's right.
Who can't afford Obamacare or a free market type of health care system.
Yeah, their biggest small business's biggest expense after salaries, which is always the largest, and before real estate, rent or amortization or whatever on the buildings and utilities is healthcare, the healthcare costs for the employees.
Yes, yes, yes. So, I mean, again, as you mentioned in the beginning, we're in the throes of a crisis, and the political manifestations of the crisis begin to suggest that there is something profoundly broken within the political system. Now, of course, the question is, can the politicians govern? Do they have the legitimacy to govern, the support of the people to govern? And I think this is what all sides in this struggle are primarily concerned about. Does the system of bourgeois governance break down? And does the nation thereby descend into ungovernability? And this, of course, opens spaces for the masses to then assert themselves in the moment.
And also their institutions of agenda setting are impaired as well in this this moment. Normally, they could just transition from that to overt fascism or whatever it was that had to be called upon, in between commercials on television. Whatever comes out of the TV, people look at it and say, I don't know what's going on, but it ain't that.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, and this is incremental. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be one dramatic event that changes everything. But people are not listening to the people who are supposed to be governing them and leading them. They're not listening to them. And people are thinking on their own. I think if we take anything away from the 2016 election, that you had two movements, the Trump movement and the Bernie Sanders movement, that were based upon masses of people saying, we don't want to hear anything that the traditional neoliberal elites are saying. This was a slap in the face to the entire neoliberal managerial class and the class interests that those forces represent.
And the neocons, too.
That is what 2016 represented. And that message is still foggy in the minds of a lot of activists and left people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was also a rejection of the neocons.
Absolutely.
The Republican Party and Democratic Party essentially had the same phenomenon. And I would argue, and you've argued too, that it's really one movement, just different faces of it, or different
manifestations. I agree with that. And the other thing, we could see what this all meant when all of the elites, for the most part, went to the Hillary camp. They did it against Bernie Sanders, blocked him, brought his movement down. And then when Trump got the nomination, they rushed to the big Hillary Clinton tent. And this meant the former head of the CIA. This meant the generals. This meant the Petraeuses. This meant the neocons in the State Department, and on and on and on.
Yep.
And they understood that they had to hold on to power. And they also understand now that while not losing power completely, their relative position in it has been weakened. And they have to regain the total control so as to manage the people, to govern the people of this country as part of making the homeland the base from which to assert its global hegemony.
Right. You have the same phenomenon happening within the country as is happening on the international stage.
Yes, absolutely. A breakdown of political rule.
And then on the international stage, you actually have the rise of competing centers of power, or even you could say a competing center of power in the Eurasian mass.
And that's right. I agree. And that's what makes the global situation more precarious for the elites of this country than the domestic situation is. What we have domestically is more spontaneous movements. What you have globally are well-organized states that are moving dramatically and not so dramatically to realign and reconfigure the world order.
And while you have the international situation essentially soaked in gasoline, this Russiagate thing in the United States is a match.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And that's why, you know, a lot of people make the argument that the Russiagate thing is just the Democrats trying to regain a foothold in the political struggle with the Republicans. I would argue that it is that in part, but that is not its essential thing. There are enormous political, ideological, military, financial resources invested in literally what would be a color revolution in Russia, the bringing down of Putin, the smearing of Russia and its government on a world scale, and punishing nations who would dare seek to align with Russia. Now, of course, it is, I think it's backfiring. Thank you, Mr. Obama, for having pushed China and Russia closer together. And again, as we've said before, the fallout of the crisis in the United States can be seen in the collapse of the government in South Korea. Now, it's not a one-to-one connection, but certainly what is happening in South Korea is not unlike what is happening in the Philippines.
That's right.
In each instance, nations that are and have been military bases and neo-colonial outposts of the American empire are moving to align themselves away from total submission to American hegemonism. And I think Asia, you know, remember the Obama pivot to Asia, the breakup or weakening of American domination and American presence in Asia is more important than perhaps what is going on in Europe, which is also quite important. The question is, in the absence of a strong American presence, can Germany take the weight against Russia? The other question is, do the Germans, especially the German people, want to be the spearhead of an American attack upon Russia?
Right.
We know that what happened as a result of World War II, when German imperialism was the spearhead of the West against Russia. So I think that I think the world, as you say, is in flux. It's a dynamic situation. It is a situation defined by crisis and imperial breakdown.
And you know, you have all these different games playing out here within the legal framework and the government framework. This stuff with the committees and, you know, this the Senate now is. Its intelligence committee is really starting to move towards the center of the stage as well. The outcomes are unpredictable. It looks like, though, this full-scale war is going on, and it's only going to get, you know, deeper and broader as it it, you know, draws in resources. What exactly? You know, we've spoken a lot about where the anti-war movement or the so-called anti-war movement and the left or the so-called left have been thus far, you know, holding up their signs with the big letters, dump Trump, and then the small letters, you know, communist revolution today or whatever, that nobody sees. what kind of positioning should they be trying to do? And first of all, how would they determine what kind of positioning to do, like, you know, an analysis? And then, you know, what should they be doing in order to try to get ahead of events here? And, I don't know, chime in on one side or the other over a coup that's underway, mm-hmm. and look at that inside the context of everything else that we've been talking about today.
Right, right. Well, first of all, I think the slogan, "Stop the Trump Agenda," is the wrong slogan. You have to fight Trump on the issues. For example, the health care replacement of Obamacare, that was a point of struggle, opposition to what the Trump White House was saying in alliance with the Republicans in the House. On the question of the environment, that is a point of struggle and opposition to Trump. I don't know what the tax reform will look like, but that is another point. But where do we agree? Here we take, I would say, the tactics of the labor movement are instructive. If Trump opposes TPP and through an executive order takes it down, you support that. The heads of the industrial unions and the heads of the AFL-CIO supported Trump on that. On issues of war with Russia and beefing up of NATO in Eastern Europe and on the borders of Russia, if Trump opposes that, you stand with him. We agree on that. On the issue of the corporate media as the enemy of the people, we agree on that. So I think you fight Trump on all of those issues that you disagree with, but tactically you support those things that you agree with. The other thing is, I think it is a real mistake, as some are doing, to attack the Trump voters as fascist, neo-fascist, and out-and-out white supremacists. This is a serious mistake, because to do that, just starting with the trade union movement, you are attacking almost half of the labor movement. And I would suggest the majority of those in the industrial unions. I think, you know, labor is divided over Trump in many ways based upon service unions versus manufacturing and building trades union. And that's an internal labor question of how they, you know, achieve some sort of tactical or principled unity. But to attack everybody that voted for Trump is literally to attack a good part of the working class. We can't afford to do that. Right. And I would just end on this, that in terms of war and peace, which is paramount, believe me, and here the Russians are absolutely right. Moving these NATO and American forces to the borders of Russia, the support for the fascist regime in Ukraine, and even suggesting bringing it into NATO, for the Russians constitutes an existential threat. And they have made it clear, the government of Russia, that is, that they will not permit another war to be fought on Russian territory. I mean, now what is that telling you? They will use all means to defend themselves. So I think the question of war and peace must embrace the issue of detente with Russia, pullback of the NATO forces, even the dismantling of NATO, and from there, whatever logic ensues, including against regime change and nation building in Syria, in Iraq, frankly, a pullback of the American support of the Saudis and involvement in Yemen and all of these issues. But the paramount one, the largest one, is war or peace with Russia, because it could involve, and in all probability would involve, nuclear weapons.
You know, and, you know, to close, looking at what you laid out, it's curious that the two points of agreement that you cite, particularly the question of war with Russia, mm-hmm. And the
TPP,
those, well, out of those, the one that still remains, the question of war with Russia, is actually an organizing point for opposition to mm-hmm. Trump among Democrats.
Yes.
And who are, you know, people have been reporting that they go, like John Walsh said, he went to this one out at the Bay Area where it was one of those town meetings with their representative, and the Democratic, you know, workers that were there were, you know, stewing at the bit to get at Putin and Russia. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it seems like it's no accident that this is, you know, this particular point is being stoked, and yet it's the essential point for the anti-war movement, and they've been absent. They'll say, on the one hand, we condemn this Russia bashing and all of that and no war with Russia, but let's get Trump out of office, which of course means Pence and or whoever follows him, and war with Russia.
Yes, and to get Trump out of office would be a win for the intelligence services and the party of war generally, because they're not opposing him because his position on health care or even the environment. They are opposing him, and this is the point of sharpest conflict with Trump, is his position on Russia. And, of course, we cannot in any way, shape, or form find ourselves objectively or otherwise aligned with the deep state and the party of war. That would be a era of irreversible historical significance.
Yeah, and on that point, I mean, that is the topic of discussion across the media.
That's
yes. It's the question of Russia, quote unquote, rather than the question of war or the question of any of these other actual issues.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. That's the way I see it. I think that, you know, I talk with a lot of leftists, and as you know, this is the year of the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution, the October Revolution.
That's right.
And I suggested to some friends that, well, the central issue should be the issue of war and peace. I said, because the first decree to come out of the government, the Bolshevik and revolutionary government, after they overthrew the Tsarist regime, was the peace decree. They sued for peace with the Western nations, 14 of whom were at that time occupying Russia. So peace in this era, and especially at this stage of the general crisis of capitalism, is always paramount. No outstanding social or political issues can be resolved without connecting them to the struggle for peace. And in this instance, the struggle for detente with Russia. In terms of understanding the logics and processes of social change, and especially radical social change, the process of social change is not an event, it is a process. People are prepared to think in new ways. As the old saying goes, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. The idea whose time has come is the idea that the neoliberal elites and Wall Street and the warmongers and their media do not speak in the interest of the masses of people. That's what we have to build upon.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.